is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a better. Welcome inside the VSIN studios here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe alongside Michael Lombardi. We're dealing with a little bit of tech difficulties today, but we're going to work through those things. Michael, how are we doing this morning?
We're doing good, Femi. I mean, we passed through the 50-day milestone, so I'm excited about that. We're getting closer to football and football. I think we're going to, teams will put pads on this week. So, you know, we're back. I think, you know, I've changed. We're no longer in off-season calendar mode. We're in training camp week one mode.
100%. The pads will be popping in due time here this coming week for the NFL. And we do have a fun show on deck for you guys before we get into more of the training camp storylines. Want to set the table for what we have over the next couple of hours. Starting 45 minutes from now, Wes Reynolds, host of VSIN Tonight and the VSIN Long Shots podcast. He will join us in 45 minutes to break down the Open Championship. We'll also get Wes's thoughts on the Big Ten, not just the NFL today. We're also discussing college football as well. And keeping up with that theme in hour number two at 11:15 Eastern, 8:15 Pacific, Brandon Marcello, college football reporter for 24/7 Sports, will join the program to break down the college football landscape. We're all throughout the media days, SEC media days behind us, Big Ten media days, I should say, coming up this week. But we'll get Brandon's thoughts on what he thinks will happen later on this fall in the world of college football. But Michael, let's get into this NFL training camp stuff, because right now, I guess as bettors, we're all itching to get some football back into our lives. But you've been in the role and the front office mindset of, I guess, what sort of is going on right now as teams prepare to arrive at training camp? They're going to see conditioning tests, all these things. Like, how do you kind of establish a sort of a tone heading into training camp, which is a really important time to get ready for the season?
Well, you know, on one hand, you're excited everybody's back. On the other hand, all of a sudden, you start losing hair in your head because you're worried about injuries now. Injuries are your nemesis, right? You've put together this team. You have about four or five battles in training camp that you're looking into. You want to see how the draft picks are doing. You know, you have two elements working at the same time, right? You want to get your players that are going to participate in week one of the season ready to go. And then you have the young players that you need to evaluate. So you've got preparation and evaluation going on simultaneously, which then creates a little bit of a imbalance on how to prepare the team. And so that navigating that, that's why I think it's so damn important as we as a betting network really study head coaches who what they look like in the opening game. For example, the last two seasons, Zach Taylor is 0-4 in the first two games of the season. And that's with Joe Burrow, because he takes an approach of, we're going to gradually build this team and not worry about September, finish strong, which he's done in the past. So I think that's kind of the mindset you're going through. How do I get the team ready, but how do I keep it healthy?
So as bettors, how do we kind of take note of these things? Because we don't have the luxury of going to training camp to see if they're practicing intense or if it's more of a load management kind of training camp. Should we be paying attention to what the coaches are saying? Should we be paying attention to what the beat writers are reporting? Like, how do we kind of, I guess, differentiate the hard, intense training camps from the training camps that are a little bit more focused on getting everybody healthy to the regular season and maybe ascending in the second half of the year?
Well, I think what you have to do is look at past performance predicts future achievement, right? I mean, I think you have to look at coaches that are really good in the opening game. We know John Harbaugh. Look, Andy Reid, you and I both know we're going to have Brett Veach on the podcast tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And we interviewed Brett Veach last week. He's at St. Joe's College like it's 1970 all over again.
He's in the
right?
dorm room. Yeah.
I mean, and he's in a dorm room. I mean, Andy Reid is old school for all the innovation that comes out of his offense. His preparation for his team is hard. I think that's kind of what you have to look at. Like, and then some of these new coaches who are coming in with a softer, gentler approach, I think they're going to get hit in the mouth quickly in terms of what it's going to look like opening day. So I think you have to look at past performance, which predicts future achievement.
Yeah, usually the history kind of gives you an outline as to who's going to come out swinging come opening day, because like that's the thing, like when people start talking about Survivor or their week one bets, because these week one lines have been out since May, those things get beaten into oblivion by the time we get to kickoff. You want to keep in mind who's actually preparing their team to play in week one. And yeah, like maybe Zach Taylor, his approach is a little bit more on the load management side. It's worked out for them when Joe Burrow's been healthy, but for week one purposes, it hasn't really worked out since they kind of start slow. And then once we get to around Halloween, it's when you see the Cincinnati Bengals really start to turn the corner and they've really gotten into a groove of things in the regular season. So we have five teams who have already reported today, at least the Texans, Bears, Ravens, Chiefs, and the Green Bay Packers. Every team will be at camp by Wednesday the 24th, and I believe everybody will be on the field by the 27th. So in less than a week, we will have all 32 teams on the field, and you mentioned injuries being the key factor here. But on the flip side of it, Michael, because on the outside, we see all the reports from the beat writers of so-and-so looks really good in camp, or this player might be a breakout star this year. Look out for them for your fantasy team or for you prop bettors. Is all of that just noise at the end of the day? Like, what should we really be paying attention to all that stuff? Because we all love the sport. We consume all of the training camp content because we're dying for football. But should we kind of, I guess, take it with a grain of salt?
I think it's a little bit of noise, right? I think you need to take it with a grain of salt. And I think really the guys that we tend not to focus on are the most important players. The last year's draft team, right? That's the players that have been in training camp, went through a season. They have to take the giant mother may I step from last year to this year and really make a huge improvement on the team. I think that those are the players that aren't talked about because new is always best. Mm-hmm. But in reality, those are the ones that have to make the biggest difference on their team, right? They have to come in. For example, Mozzie Smith at Dallas, he's going to have to show that he can play better, right? Because, yep. I mean, when you look at Dallas's team last year, you know, Micah Parsons had 33 pressures. The next closest guy was Osa, and I can't pronounce his last name, with 14. You know, so there's such a discrepancy in terms of who can put pressure on the quarterback. We also know they can't run, they can't save the run game. They play with the lead so often, Femi, as you know, being a fan of them, they play with the lead so often that they never were really tested in the run game. And yet, when they were tested in the run game, they couldn't hold up. So I think that's kind of the approach. You have to go into the season with preseason questions that you're looking at, right? That you want to examine, that you want to study for each team. And, you know, certainly we're going to provide that for you here with the network and on the Lombardi line and with what we do. But Dallas, for example, as you go through their questions and you look at what they're, you know, what they're being, what has to happen for them, you know, that's one of the key areas is who else is going to make an impact to their defensive front with Mike Zimmer in there. The other thing about Dallas, that's, and I don't want to make this about Dallas, but I think they're the perfect example of it, is we talk, the most important stat in football is first half point differential. And Dallas scored 296 points in the first half. They only allowed 172. So they had 124 first half point differential. And then they dominated the fourth quarter, 144-67. So what happens when you're playing with that far ahead of people, no one really wants to run the ball. In the four of their six losses, Femi, they gave up 266, 222, 170, 143, and 125 to Detroit, which they won. The only game that they lost that gave up less than 100 yards was against Miami. Think about that.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, that was the bugaboo for the Dallas Cowboys, that front seven, is can they actually stop the run in those competitive games? And if they were ever to get behind, can they really stop the run when the other team is playing on the front foot? We saw that to not be the case for the Dallas Cowboys. They're much more of a front-running defense when they play with the lead, unleash Parsons, unleash Odigizuwa, Lawrence, all these guys, let them get after the quarterback, which they do really, really well. You mentioned the question marks for all of these teams because that's how you want to look at it heading into training camp. How about the Kansas City Chiefs? Because right now, over at DraftKings, the Chiefs, by the handle and by bets, are the most bet on team to win the Super Bowl, also the most bet on team to win the AFC. People are predicting, or at least betting, that we might see history this year in the national football team. The Chiefs are the first team to ever three-peat in the Super Bowl era. What are the question marks for the Kansas City Chiefs as we enter their training camp?
They have significant ones, believe it or not, Femi. I mean, they really do. Starting with their offensive line, Wynu Morris, is he going to be their starting left tackle? Joe Tooney did come into camp. He's not healthy. So the left side of their line is going to be interesting. They drafted Samatata from BYU, Kingsley Samatata. And, you know, is he going to be ready to play? I don't know. And then how good are they going to be at wide receiver? Obviously, having Hollywood Brown was an addition to them. But is Rashid Rice going to get suspended? You know, I think that's a question. Kadarius Toney, we know he hasn't been able to come through. So yeah. I think there's a lot of question marks. And then the one on defense that has to concern Chief fans is Trent McDuffie moving from inside corner, which he was very good, blue chip player there, to outside corner. Can he hold up? And then losing some of the players, losing the luster. Where is Chris Jones going to be in the conditioning period? I think that's going to be the key.
Yeah, Chris Jones at least will be at training camp after last season when he missed all of camp and even missed the first game of the season with the contract impasse. They got that done, and it hurt them a little bit in the regular season, but they finally turned the corner in the playoffs and ultimately won another Super Bowl. But the Chiefs are the team that, can they do it? Can they make the history? Their win total sitting at 11.5. Last year they won 11 games. Andy Reid with the Chiefs has never gone under his win total, which is really, really impressive with the high expectations that this team has had. They've won 8 straight AFC West titles. They are the king of the NFL. We'll see if anybody can knock them off, but maybe there could be a team in the NFC, perhaps. Could it be the Detroit Lions, who are the most bet team in terms of the handle and the bets to win the NFC? Michael, we got about 40 seconds left, but do you agree with that? The Lions being kind of the front runner here, at least in the betting minds of many folks out there.
Yeah, I mean, look, they added to their defense. They're, when you break this team down, all the question marks were on their defense, and that's where they improved. Now, it's got to take place. Paper-wise, yes. We'll see what happens on the field.
Yeah, it's a lot to like with the Detroit Lions on both sides of the trenches. The defensive line, they've added DJ Reader, a nice pickup for them on the interior there. We'll see Aiden Hutchinson now in year 3. If he can take another step forward, maybe he becomes one of the better defensive players in the National Football League. And then, of course, a lot to like on the offensive side of the ball here, including their quarterback, Jared Goff. All right, on the other side, we'll play a little bit of GM Translator, some sound bites ahead of training camp here next on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Start your football season off right with our VSiN football special when you sign up before the end of July and get a full VSiN Pro access from now to the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of $175. That saves you nearly 50% off the monthly price. And with this VSiN Pro access, you'll gain access to the daily best bets, exclusive betting splits, proven betting systems and analysis from professional handicappers, 24/7 video content, and our special edition betting guides, including our new NFL betting guide packed with detailed team, division, conference analysis, plus season win totals, futures, props, and awards best bets. Michael wrote in the guide. I wrote in the guide. Many, many other VSiN hosts and analysts also wrote in the guide. It's in-depth coverage. Take advantage of it. $175 before the end of July. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi. Hope everyone's enjoying their Sunday morning. It's not just football on the show. We also have the Open Championship happening. Final round over at Royal Troon, where Justin Rose currently is the leader at 5-under. Behind him, Thurston Lawrence at 4-under, as well as Billy Horschel. But Michael, there is that Scottie Scheffler. He's lingering, just 2 back. And man, I tell you what, like, one of the reasons I have not really been betting golf this year is just because Scheffler feels like he's a little bit unbeatable. We saw him torch the Masters. He's won a bunch of PGA Tour events. But right now, you can get him at 5-1 at DraftKings to win the Open Championship. If I was holding a ticket on one of these other guys that's ahead of him, I would be a little concerned with Scottie lurking, but just 2 back.
Yeah, I mean, look, when you're playing at the level that he's playing at consistently and dealing with the elements. I mean, yesterday's weather was atrocious, and obviously Shane Lowry felt the brunt of it, correct? Mm-hmm. And so I think, to me, you know, anytime Scottie's in the hunt, it's a little tigerish, right? I think the other players feel that he's around, and they know he could potentially come in and create a lot of problems for them.
100%, especially guys who have not won it. Like Justin Rose, he's won a major, but he hasn't won in a while. Billy Horschel's out there trying to win a major. It's like Xander Schauffele, who finally broke through and won a major this year at the PGA Championship. He's in the mixes as well. He's 2 back in the pairing with Scottie Scheffler. So you have a couple of those major winners that are lurking just behind Justin Rose, who currently is the leader. But yeah, yesterday I was watching the coverage, and I was like, half the time I couldn't even see what was happening. You saw the raindrops on the cameras and all that stuff. The wind is going, and hey, you're in Scotland on the shores, and I guess even in July you're going to get some of this, I guess, inclement weather a little bit, but those guys are powering through it, and credit to them. They're the best golfers in the world, and we'll see what happens later on today at Royal Trudon. We'll get Wes Reynolds' thoughts on this 30 minutes from now, who he likes to ultimately lift the claret jug and be the champion golfer of the year. All right, let's get back to the National Football League and play a little bit of GM Translator, because now that it's training camp time, we're hearing more and more general managers talk, players talk, and we'll start to be able to decipher what they mean in these quotes. And we'll start off, Michael, with Cowboys COO Stephen Jones, who recently was on the Scoop City podcast talking about all of the contracts that they have on the books, Dak Prescott, Michael Parsons, CeeDee Lamb, etc. Well, here's what Stephen Jones had to say about trying to navigate through these contract waters.
You know, those things just take time when you're talking about the amount of money involved. And, of course, we're trying to a little bit play Houdini and how to keep all these guys around Dak and keep these players we were fortunate enough to draft. And, you know, when you start stacking them up like that, you know, it's a challenge. It's not that it's not doable, but you certainly got to, you know, have some give and take. You know, we got a big one in Dak, and we got Diggs right there, and then you got Zach Martin and D-Law. And so we got a lot of guys making, you know, quite a bit of money. And, you know, it's no excuses. We, you know, we think we can get this done, know we can get it done, but it just takes time.
How would you translate that as a former general manager?
Well, I think right now the way I translate it is the players are asking for more than they're willing to spend. It's a classic negotiation. And I think the question for Dallas is, you know, when are they going to realize what they have to pay? I think Dak holds all the cards. In that conversation, it did not indicate to me that they were, you know, Stephen, the way he said around Dak, meaning that they're going to continue to go down the road with Dak, which obviously is hard not to go down, and considering he's a top 10 player in the league at his position.
Yeah, I mean, he's making it, like you said, it's pretty much classic negotiation of, hey, we're going to try to get these guys done, but right now we're not at an area where we feel comfortable paying them whatever these guys are asking for. I did see a report earlier, and I believe it was from Diana Rossini over at The Athletic, saying that there were some positive conversations between the Cowboys and Dak Prescott. I don't think anything's going to get done with Dak. Could we actually get a stunner here that maybe they come to an agreement with Dak Prescott prior to the regular season?
Well, if they did, it would be a huge for them, Femi, because they're carrying such a huge cap number on them. And, you know, if they redid Dak's deal and was able to lower his cap number down, they could then afford to redo some other guys. It's going to cost more cash, but they could manage their cap a hell of a lot more effectively.
100%, yeah, because like that Dak Prescott cap hit is massive, and if they can just kind of somehow get that down, that would be beneficial for the Cowboys in this 2024 season. Let's move it along to the Houston Texans, of course, coming off of a surprise season a year ago. Many people thought they were going to be one of the worst teams in the league. They ultimately won the division and even won a playoff game, beating the Cleveland Browns in the wild card round. Well, quarterback C.J. Stroud knows that they are now the hunted, no longer the hunter, is what he told the media earlier this week ahead of training camp.
You know, yeah. It's not going to be easy. It's going to be harder. You know, we have a target on our back this year, and, you know, that's how you should want it, you know, and that's what I'm used to playing at Ohio State. And, you know, I'm really, you know, honored and blessed to have the teammates that I do to want that challenge and for guys that want to come and play here, because, you know, this Texan team isn't for everybody. It's hard here. And, you know, we're blessed enough to play a game that we've been playing since we've been kids. So, you know, I definitely do think that all the expectations, if we just work, I mean, everything will take care of itself.
Sounds like he's embracing the fact that, hey, they are seen as now one of the contenders in the AFC.
Yeah, and I think to me, he understands it, but I think it's going to require them to really play at a much higher level. I mean, there's a little bit of a run-on on these. I'm writing a column for the Daily Coach tomorrow about expectations, and I think these expectations placed on Houston is somewhat unfair. Because when you really break down their season and look at where they were last year, Femi, and even to Stroud, as well as he played, I mean, the fact that he's in the top 10 quarterbacks in the league and Brock Purdy isn't, by this poll that was created by the worldwide leader, is absurd. I mean, you know, people forget that, you know, when he played, you know, there were some games last year against Carolina, he threw for 119 yards, yeah. You know, you know, so I think to me, you got to be really careful. You got to be careful about the level of expectations as you move forward. Did he have a great year? Yeah, but becoming good to great is a lot harder than people think it is.
Oh, 100%. I'm with you right now. Like, we've kind of drawn some of a little bit of a comparison between Texans this year and Jaguars last year. Now, I don't think it's a one-to-one comparison because there's obviously some differences there, but it does feel kind of similar, just how everyone expected Trevor Lawrence to now be an MVP conversation, the Jaguars to then join the Kansas Cities, the Buffaloes, the Cincinnatis as contenders. And they sort of kind of fell off last year. They only had a 9-8 season and things kind of got off the rails. I'm not saying that that's exactly what's going to happen to Houston this year, but maybe just temper the expectations a little bit, because I think if you look at just kind of the objective opinion of the Houston Texans a season ago, they weren't that good of a football team. Like, kudos to them for winning the South, but I don't think that they were this top-notch team that maybe they're being kind of expected to be in 2024. Now, CJ Stroud can, of course, take a step forward, but I think that maybe a little bit too much is being expected of this team. Like what you said, Michael, it might be a little bit unfair to Houston. Let's move over to the Chicago Bears. We're speaking of expectations. Bears fans have high expectations for this team. The Bears will be on Hard Knocks, the training camp version, coming up in a couple of weeks here. And Caleb Williams is kind of maybe trying to recalibrate some of these expectations this upcoming training camp.
I mean, I've had rough days. I expect myself to go out there. I think I'm the toughest on myself. I go out there and I'll mess up a play. I've thrown a pick in mini camp and things like that. Being tough on myself, but also having an understanding of where we are and where I am, and you know, the progression, like I said before, is key. And those bad times, it's not a time to have self-doubt. That's just a waste of time. It's a time to, you know, keep growing, keep progressing, and keep believing in yourself.
Caleb Williams telling, hey, like, you know, there's going to be times out there where I struggle. I feel like, how would you translate what he had to say?
I think he's as brutally honest as he can be, and you got to love it. I mean, he is going to struggle. I think the bigger question for him is how quickly can he understand that what happened at SC isn't going to happen in the NFL, and that those loose plays and the ability to move around and move away from people is a little bit different. You know, he's got to protect the football in the pocket. And I just worry about that they put so much pressure and expectations on this team that are somewhat unrealistic. Can he hold up with the two tackle situation that he has? Is the offensive line good enough? I think those are some fair points on this team that you have to really take a hard look at and see, because I think when you break the team down, everybody just assumes that this is a team that's going to just come in the league and just dominate.
Yeah. I think one thing that as bettors and fans, we have to remind ourselves is, like, teams just don't pick up where they left off a season ago. Like, this is a whole nother season, and you got to kind of start from ground zero once again. And I think a lot of people think, well, the Bears won 70 games last year. Now they add Caleb Williams, they add DJ Moore and Keenan Allen, all these guys, and then they're going to win 9-10 games. It's like, it doesn't really work like that in the NFL. Every single season presents new problems, and there could be some new problems that come up for the Chicago Bears. We'll continue GM Translator and get into some training camp specials next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line here on a Sunday, hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network, Femi Abebefe, and look at this. Michael Lombardi back in the flesh. We got the video back up. We've been working through it. Everyone's been working through stuff. We had the global IT outage and stuff like that. You know, maybe you tried to take us down, but you ain't taking us down on this Sunday, man. We made it through.
No doubt, Femi. I mean, we had I don't know what happened. You know, last night here in Ocean City is like this summer event, the big summer event. It's called Night in Venice, even though. And so it's a boat parade and zillions of people come into town. I don't know if it was overload on the computer or what, but we're back. Ken is a remarkable. Everybody in the office was great. I mean, we were here early. I mean, they were here at 7:30 in the morning my time out in Las Vegas, which meant somebody was up at 4:30. So we certainly appreciate everybody's effort towards doing their job and being responsible for making this show happen. Thank you.
100% working through crisis. You know, it's just another Sunday, and we're able to go ahead and get that done. Terrific job by our crew to get your shot back up. I mean, speaking of which, I mean, the global IT outage that was going on, I mean, like some of the sports books were feeling the effects of this. Obviously, more importantly, like airlines and like the hospitals, like this thing was it was crazy. You just woke up Friday morning and like the internet pretty much shut off everywhere, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, travel was remarkable. I mean, my son was flying back to Oregon, and it took him 22 hours to get back there. I feel bad. Summer, I think one of the misconceptions about travel, summer travel is the worst travel of all.
Yeah.
Because you always are going to get thunderstorms, weather, the airports. I've never seen airports as crowded as I've seen airports. The other night, I landed back from my speech in from Shreveport. Just to get out of the Philadelphia airport within a car, it took a half hour. Like to leave the airport, it was that much. It looked like rush hour in New York City at Christmas time.
Yeah, no, it's really crazy. Like, yeah, I think we all think about holiday travel, but summer travel, because every weekend people are traveling in the summertime, going on different vacations and all that stuff. Like, that's the time when the kids are out of school, so it's easier to do those things. But man, the airport is it's not a happy place in the summertime, even though summer is a happy time of the year when we're all kind of relaxed and going on those vacations. But just to update folks on what's happening right now across the pond at the Open Championship, we now have three men who are tied at the top of the leaderboard at 5-under: Justin Rose, Tristan Thorne, Lawrence and Billy Horschel. We were speaking glowingly of Scottie Scheffler in the last segment. He dropped a shot. He's now three back, but you know, three back, you know, in a major, there's ups and downs, peaks and valleys. Yeah, Scottie Scheffler can always do something.
It's one bunker. It's one bunker, really. Yeah. You know, I think the interesting thing that's discussed, and I said this at the time, Rory McIlroy not playing the next week. You know, everybody's making a big deal that he didn't go and talk to the media after missing the three-footer that could have gone to playoff. But the reality of it is not playing the next week, I think, is worse than anything. And I think ultimately, you know, he's going to have to bury that scars of those short putts. And I think he's going to have to do a much better job of handling it, right? Shane Lowry's bounced back today, though. He's moved five places up in the leaderboard. He's minus four for the day after a disastrous weather day yesterday.
Yeah, Rory McIlroy ended up shooting 11 over. He was the second choice pre-tournament to win the Open Championship, and it was not a good outing at Royal Trinity. The Open Championship is a tournament where he's usually one of the favorites, if not the favorite. Scottie Scheffler was a favorite this year, but Rory McIlroy was right behind him there, and to not even make the cut, you do wonder if some of these, I guess, woes of not winning these majors and coming so close at the U.S. Open and losing out to Bryson DeChambeau, if that kind of affects Rory McIlroy going forward. Scheffler just went ahead and picked up that shot right again. So now he's back to two back off of the lead. Three under the leaders, once again, Rose, Lawrence, Horschel at 5-under. But we're still in the early stages of this final round. We'll talk about this more on the next segment with our buddy Wes Reynolds, host of VSiN Tonight and the VSiN Long Shots podcast. But let's get back to the National Football League. Kansas City Chiefs, who we discussed in the first segment, are trying to make NFL history and be the first team to three-peat in the Super Bowl era. Well, head coach Andy Reid addressed the media earlier before training camp and talked about this with Patrick Mahomes and how the Chiefs are still trying to maintain that edge as they head into this 2024 regular season.
The one great thing about Patrick is he's always going to work in his game, and then he always wants more. And so as coaches, you can't ask for more than that. And that's why we're in it. We're trying to give you one more nugget, Vahe, so you can be greater than you already are. Right? So that's what the great players do. They want you to dig as a coach and find something, man. Give me something here that can help me and become better than what I am.
How would you translate what Andrew Reid, who's wearing a terrific shirt, by the way, what he would have to say to
him? Well, I think what he's saying is Mahomes has got no sense of contentment. That's exactly what he's saying. And all great players are grinders. They're grinders. They don't worry about what they've accomplished. They worry about what it takes. And, for example, if you go to Houston's practices during the OTA days, this is what worries you a little bit about Houston. Houston, you know, they have 12 reps in their 7-on-7 period. You know, they'll split those reps up, 3-4 Stroud, 3-4 DJ Davis Mills, you know, and 3-4 Case Keenum. In Kansas City, Mahomes is going to take 9 of them. He's given 3 to the backup. That's it. You know, that's it. Carson Wentz is getting 3. Move on. He's going to play. He's going to take 70% of the reps in the OTA days. This is Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
That's the way Brady was. That's the way all great players are. They're grinders. They just want to show you what they have, and they want to do it again and again and again. And they never, the word "I got it" never enters their mind.
They're always looking to see where they can improve. I think Peyton Manning was famously said that his backups never got any reps throughout training camp or throughout practice. Yeah. He was like Jim Sorgi or whoever. It's like, hey, buddy, you can stand off to the side and watch me. Like, I got to work on this so that I can be at my very best. And you see, that's why one of these all-time great players, they ultimately continue to have success and get better, which is, I mean, think about Patrick Mahomes getting better. As good as he is now, the fact that he is looking to get better, that's a scary sign for the National Football League, because this guy is already one of the all-time greats, and he's so early on in his career, having been a three-time Super Bowl champion. You know, a team that we haven't really discussed much that is at training camp right now is the Green Bay Packers. And we all talk about the Houston Texans as maybe expectations are a little high for Houston. Isn't Green Bay kind of a little bit of an NFC version of that, where we saw them have that great second half of the season? By the end of the year, Jordan Love was playing like a top 10 quarterback. He was terrific in the playoffs. It had the bad interception to end the game against San Francisco. But Green Bay now, with this win total of 9.5, they're seen as kind of maybe a chic pick to represent the NFC this year.
Well, I think that the fact that sometimes the absence of someone creates the illusion of progress, right? So when Joe Barry left, everybody's spirits in Green Bay, all fans, Big Daddy included, was delighted because they are now rid of Joe Barry, who they thought was the main problem and the reason why they couldn't play any run defense. I mean, last year they had four games, Femi. They gave up over 200 yards rushing. Four games, and they lost all four of them, just for the record. You know, and one of those games were against the New York Football Giants. And so you gave up 400 to the Atlanta Falcons on the ground. You gave up 400 to the Detroit Lions on the ground. The Giants and Pittsburgh, you lost all those games. So when you remove the inability to play run defense, which they're saying, we don't know if this is true, Jeff Hafley will correct this, then that's where the optimism comes in. And I think that's why you're seeing people want to bet on Green Bay. The other issue that I think gets ignored at times is, are we sure Jordan Love can play consistently through the season and play effectively? I think when you look at the second half of the 49er game, it wasn't as good as the first half. Was that because the game plan ran out? San Francisco adjusted? You know, Love couldn't make the throws that they needed him to make. We'll see. But I think ultimately those are the question marks. But the positivity comes from the removal of Barry, for sure.
Should we be buying into that positivity? And like Jeff Hafley, who comes over from Boston College, obviously a really good defensive mind. Do we need to be buying into that, saying like, hey, like this will be an improved defense? Yeah. Or is it going to take some time maybe?
I think one of the reasons why is when you have Rashard Gary, who's one of the best players at his position, he's a top 10 player. Kenny Clark's a top 10 player. Mm. You know, Preston Smith isn't the same guy that he once was, but Igbebare, the Kingsley Igbebare from South Carolina, is a really good player, and he comes in and rushes at times. Yep. And so, you know, you're hoping Quay Walker can stay healthy. You're hoping the kid they drafted, Cooper, can come in and make a big difference. They have talent. I mean, when you watch them on tape, you wonder why they can't play run defense. You wonder why they can't get in there. And they obviously add an Xavier McKinney as the strong safety should also improve their run support. So their talent, and I think that's one of the frustrations Packer fans have, is they didn't play to their talent level.
Yeah, they've invested a lot in that defense. Like, there's first-round picks littered throughout this defense. Now it's time for those guys to play like it. It's like you want to take that next step as a team. If they do take that next step as a defense, maybe they can be a direct challenger to the Detroit Lions, who are the favorites to win the NFC North. You know, it is interesting that we didn't see much of the Xavier McKinney, Joe Shane negotiation stuff in the offseason hard knocks with the New York Giants. I think they mentioned him like a couple times. It's mainly been a Saquon Barkley deal for that offseason hard knocks for the New York Giants. But we'll see as that hard knocks progresses next week. We'll get some more NFL draft nuggets. But the Green Bay Packers, an interesting team, I think, in the NFC right now. The fifth choice to win the NFC in the betting markets over at DraftKings. All right, on the other side, we'll turn our attention to the Open Championship and a little college football when Wes Reynolds joins us here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
you haven't already done so, make sure you check out our guy Steve Mackinnon with the College Football Win Total Best Bets. It's on the website. You can also get some Major League Baseball stuff, Saratoga picks for Sunday, as well as the final thoughts on the Open Championship, which you can still live bet because, boy, we got a fun tournament that's saving up here on this Sunday. Make sure you check out all that stuff over at VSiN.com. Today. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Michael Lombardi on the great state of New Jersey. Femi Abebefe hanging out here in downtown Las Vegas at the Circa Resort and Casino. And to help us break down the college football and the Open Championship, we're bringing in our guy, Wes Reynolds, host of VSiN Tonight and the VSiN Long Shots podcast. Wes joins us, of course, courtesy the Progressive Guest Line. Wes, good morning. Thanks for waking up with us. Although you might have already been up since the Open Championship gets going rather early here. But Wes, let's talk about this thing. We're discussing a little bit during the break. We have seven players right now who are within, or actually, Billy Horschel has taken the lead. Prior to Billy Horschel going ahead and birdieing there on number five, we had seven guys that were either tied or one shot back. I mean, who's going to win this thing? I think from a live betting opportunity, this is what you want here with a field that's pretty wide open, shaping up for a pretty dramatic Sunday.
Yeah, Sammy, good to be with you guys. Your guess is as good as mine at this point because I did not expect – I thought we'd get a little separation on the leaderboard. We don't really have it. But look, now with Billy Horschel taking the lead, and Billy Horschel is kind of the quintessential definition of like a very good professional tour player. He's won eight times on the PGA Tour, but he's never really been in the mix for a major. Actually, 2013 at Marion at the U.S. Open, which Justin Rose ended up winning, he was the 36-hole leader, but he's never really been right there in a major, but he's a veteran guy and just kind of, grinding it out right now. But you've got so many different interesting storylines. I think Justin Rose, who's now in his 40s, that's an interesting storyline because he had to qualify and go through the sectional qualifying just to get into the Open Championship. You've got Thurston Lawrence, who's won four times on the DP World Tour. Probably not a lot of fans know who he is, but he's a good young South African player. Shane Lowry, who looked like he was done after yesterday, after that back nine, he's right there. And then you go into the guys that have won the majors this year, Scottie Scheffler, Xander Schauffele, and we were kind of kidding before the break. It's like, yeah, it's almost like it's going to come down to those two guys after all these storylines and after Daniel Brown being up there, the big-time long shot, and sticking around through the weekend. And I have Russell Henley. He's my only guy in play right now that I bet after the first round, but he's kind of on the periphery of contention. So I wish I could give you a definitive who's going to win this thing. I kind of, from just a fan standpoint, if you don't have anybody involved, I'd like to see Billy Horschel because he's had a great career, and this could be like Brian Harman last year where that one moment, you know, he gets that one major and maybe this could be it. But you know, Xander and Scotty are going to be tough to beat down the stretch.
Wes, it seems to me, based on weather conditions and wind and all that, that there is really good scoring out there. I mean, Lowry's already minus three after nine. So what do you think the final score will be that wins this tournament? Forget who's going to win it.
I think it probably is going to get to about eight under, Michael, which I never would have thought as of yesterday, even though we knew that the rain was going to subside, the wind is still going to be there. There's a lot of crosswinds because usually on this course on the front nine, more often than not, the wind is behind the players. So the front nine plays easier. And then they get to the back at Royal Troon and then the wind goes right in their face. But all this has been crosswind so far today. And the guy that, you know, really plays the wind the best, I think is going to win. Justin Rose certainly, I think, likes this right to left wind based on a shot shape. But yeah, I think it's going to look like it's eight under, whereas I thought it might have been four or five going into today.
Yeah, no, I think eight under is a great major score. I know a lot of people like to see carnage and the one over win a tournament and all that stuff, but eight under I think is a good major score. I think we're set up for a really fun back nine here with so many players in contention at the Open Championship. We'll see who ultimately lifts the claret jug. We're hanging out with Wes Reynolds here on the Progressive Guest Line. Wes, host of VSiN Tonight as well as the VSiN Long Shots podcast. But Wes also is deep in the diving into the college football, and Wes, being an Indiana guy, is a Big Ten guy. Wes, let's discuss the Big Ten as we have media days coming up a little bit later on this week. And as someone who roots for the Washington Huskies, I'm curious to see how they translate to this conference. Oregon now is in this conference, as well as USC and UCLA. How do these West Coast teams sort of factor into your handicap of the Big Ten, which of course the favorite is the Ohio State Buckeyes?
Well, I think the Ducks are going to be right there in contention to win it because one of the observations that I think are correct observations about the Ducks that you've seen over the last couple of years, they're a Pac-12 team that's built a little bit like an SEC or a Big Ten hybrid team. And I just think that the talent is there. Dan Lanning is a very tough coach has instilled, I think, some real toughness in that team. And also the fact that they're recruiting at a high level. It seems like every day I see on the X or on the Twitter that they're getting some new 4 or 5 star recruit. look, they lost to the Huskies, of course, in the Pac-12 title game. So that prevented them the shot at the national title. And they've got a little bit to replace. But look, Dylan Gabriel comes in at quarterback. Dante Moore from UCLA is now the backup. You've got a really good receiving corps. So offensively, I don't think that they're going to have much trouble. And then they really upgraded the secondary in the transfer portal. So I think Oregon is right there with Ohio State, who's going to be, of course, loaded on offense. Washington, you know, probably a little bit of a transition, of course, with DeBoer going to Alabama and a lot of the assistants no longer with the program. Jed Fish, who did a really good job at Arizona, I think getting them on more steady ground is going to take over there. But clearly, I think the Huskies are going to take a step back. I think UCLA is a total rebuild now with Deshaun Foster taking over as head coach for Chip Kelly, who's now the offensive coordinator at Ohio State for Ryan Day. And then USC is kind of like the wild card here. Is their defense better? Because USC went across town to get De'Anton Lynn as the defensive coordinator from UCLA. So they needed to upgrade that defense. I saw that defense up close against Washington last year in the Coliseum, and they couldn't tackle. They took poor angles. Like, they were just poorly. It seemed like they were so poorly coached defensively. But I think that's going to be improved now. You know, who's going to win the quarterback job? That's going to be the big question. But I never worry necessarily about Lincoln Riley offensively.
Let me ask you a question, Wes. You're working on the Mac for the guide, and that'll be coming out shortly. Talk to us about, because I think the Mac is one of the best conferences to bet on. If you truly understand it, if you go by a game basis, you'll get beat. But if you understand the Mac and do it like you do, I'm not sure the spreads are always on point like they are in the Southeast Conference. So talk about the Mac and what you see as a team that may be undervalued in the Mac.
Yeah, Michael, and usually in the MAC, why you get so competitive is because there's not always a talent gap necessarily, because a lot of these schools get kind of picked apart, I think, really, by the transfer portal. And then, you know, these Group of Five conferences have really been the ones that get hurt, because the Big Ten and the SEC and the Big 12 come and take all that talent. But Miami right now, you'd say Miami and Toledo kind of at the top two are relatively separated from the pack. Even though Miami, look, they lose that all-star kicker that they have to Alabama. They lose their big play receiver to South Carolina, but they have a lot of talent there. Toledo also has a lot of talent. But, you know, if I'm looking a little bit down the board, just trying to see who can maybe, you know, really contend with those guys, Western Michigan, I think, who's going to be picked probably about fourth or fifth. Second year, they were 4-8 last year. Lance Taylor was is the head coach, former offensive coordinator at Louisville. And they return a lot. They really didn't get hit as much out of the portal as you might have think. They do bring in new coordinators on both sides of the ball. But their experience, and now they got some talent, Walt Bell on offense, Scott Power on defense. So this is a team that maybe could step up there and challenge kind of those two middle teams. I think Western Michigan and Bowling Green to challenge Miami and Toledo. But I think Miami and Toledo are the rightful two favorites.
Wes, we got about a minute left. Do you have a dark horse team to make the new 12-team playoff?
We were kind of thinking about that the other day on VSiN Tonight, myself and Matt Humans. I think Ole Miss. And I don't know how much of a dark horse they are. I think they're going to be picked third or fourth in the SEC. I think Ole Miss is really a dark horse there. I like Jackson Dart. I want to see how much more, if they're going to run the ball a little bit more, if they're going to throw a little bit more, because they lost a little bit in the portal, but they gained a lot. And Lane is really recruiting well down there. So I think Ole Miss, the two favorites are going to be Georgia and Texas, but I think Ole Miss is going to be right there at the end. You're going to get at least three in the playoff out of the SEC and maybe four.
Yeah, the college football landscape has been shaken up here, but I think it's going to set up for a really exciting 2024 regular season. And Wes will be all over it throughout the year, writing up all these great stuff for VSiN.com as well as the bets that he puts out there for college football. Make sure you check it out over at WesReynolds1 on Twitter. Wes, thanks as always for the time, man. Be well.
You bet, guys. Thank you.
That is Wes Reynolds from VSiN tonight at the Long Shots podcast, and he joined us on the Progressive Guest Line. As we were talking to Wes, Michael, Justin Rose has now joined Billy Horschel atop the leaderboard, so the two of them at 6-under as we're inching closer and closer to the back nine here of the Open Championship. All right, that does it for hour number one. Hour number two coming up next here on the Lombardi Line.